Surely it seems Hollywood terrorists have put Washington, D.C. at the top of their list.
Alpha 1, do you have the target?
Roger that. We're holding the president in the library.
This is the president. If you could connect me to whatever command structure we still have left.
Sir, there's no intrusion.
Let's go. Move.
Olympus is falling. Olympus is falling.
Yikes. Viewers of the cheesy action films Olympus Has Fallen and White House Down could see the chilling results of a future attack on the White House and the Capitol, far more destructive than the real attack on the Pentagon back in 2001, when a hijacked plane rammed into the western face of the Pentagon's outer ring. Not exactly the proudest moment for the Stars and Stripes.
It must have been the most humiliating and maddening moment for most Americans.
That's former BBC diplomatic correspondent Peter Snow, and he's not talking about any real or imagined terrorist attack on Washington, D.C. He is recounting the actual moment in history when the White House and the rest of Washington were laid waste exactly 200 years ago, at the end of the War of 1812. The British Army tore through the eastern seaboard, ravaging the USA's defenses and burning down the White House in a bit of history that not even Hollywood has seen fit to revisit. Peter Snow is author of When Britain Burned Down the White House, and he says that war in 1812 to 1815 established a lot of what we understand today as the American identity, self-confident and prone to re-examining our worst moments down through history.
The wonderful thing about this country, John, is the way they discuss and commemorate the most embarrassing events in their history with great gusto.
No remorse about burning down the White House?
Well, there was a divided country, funnily enough, rather like America was divided about the War of 1812. The British were divided. There were some who felt that burning down the shrines of American democracy were not a good thing to do at all.
And scarcely 5,000 of them came to a nation of 7 million and brought it to its knees.
Yes, it's extraordinary, isn't it? I mean, it was. That's why the British do celebrate this as a rather audacious and brilliant military operation. They got as far as Washington. The American army scattered in front of them, understandably, because these were serious redcoats who'd been through the war in Europe. But anyway, they got into Washington. They found the White House empty. In they went, dinner on the table, waiting for James Madison and his army to get back and have it later on in the day. And, of course, the British ate the dinner designed for James and his victorious...
And then burned the house down.
And then they burned the house done.
That's a detail. I mean, it wasn't just sort of in the course of fighting. It was, let's have some dinner and then burn this crib to the ground.
Very British thing to do, really. Tuck into dinner and then burn the place down.
So seriously, what would it have looked like in Washington had we been there 200 years ago? Give us a sense of the scale of really the destruction.
Absolute pandemonium, I imagine. Extraordinary scenes in the American Capitol of this foreign army. The second time in American history this had happened to the Capitol. I mean, the other time, of course, was when Al-Qaeda came and had to go at the Pentagon in 2001. But, it must have been a terrifying moment when the British Army turns up and everybody's running for it. The president and his wife leaving the White House, remembering, fortunately, to take the picture of George Washington off the wall of the dining room.
That's good. Smart. Yeah.
And then in come the British, and people very scared, understandably. They'd clear out. And then suddenly, looking at the horizon from Georgetown, from Brookville, from neighboring towns where they'd escaped to, the Americans see these flames from Congress, their own Congress, recently built, magnificent building. It must have been the most humiliating and maddening moment for most Americans. And I think they felt very irritated about the way the president and his army had behaved.
Well, here's how some of the newspapers in Britain described what went on. I'm telling you, it's just amazing. I mean, hyperbole doesn't really capture it here. Washington, the proud seat of that nest of traitors whose accursed arts involved us in war with our brethren beyond the Atlantic. The Morning Post called America's defeat an example of pusillanimity hitherto unknown in the long course of ages. The deeper their shame, the higher must our exultation soar.
Okay, well, the Brits are pretty guilty of hyperbole there. But you've done it too in America, I'm sure, once or twice. It was disgraceful.
We learned it from you, boy.
But John, at the same time, some Brits, like Sam Whitbread, a backbench MP, a radical MP, was saying, you know, the British have behaved in Washington like even the Goths failed to do in Rome when they were there. I mean, it was divided. There were people who thought this was Harry Smith, one of General Ross's own staff, General Ross, who commanded the British force that went into Washington. He said we went into Washington with barbaric intent. People were divided about it. But let me just say this. in those days, I mean, in the Second World War, we bombed hundreds of thousands of people in Dresden, killing women and children. What else could you do in those days but have a good burn? If the enemy had run away from the battle and there was nobody there, you just burn these public buildings. And they did stick to the public buildings, to be fair.
Right. Human Rights Watchers on the phone here. So let's move to Baltimore. The Orioles are doing pretty well this year, which is a good thing because Baltimore actually is suffering a bit of a nadir in its power and clout in America compared to what it was 200 years ago. I mean, this was a city that was going to learn the lessons of the burning of Washington, had 2 weeks to bolster its defenses, and kicked some very serious goth behind.
Oh, no question. This was the reverse of Washington, and it was very successfully done by General Sam Smith and George Armistead, the commander of the fort at Fort McHenry, and the British were rebuffed. No question about it. One thing, though, that John, the British Americans do tend to say is the triumph, the victory of Baltimore. Come off it. The British simply decided to lift the siege. I mean, they just thought it. The opposition was so impressive.
The old, "You're it, I quit" defense. Yeah.
Yes. Right. You're being very tough on me.
Being very tough on you.
But I don't think Baltimore was an American victory. Well, it wasn't a British defeat.
And you describe that not as a victory, but as the British said, to hell with it.
I'm afraid I do, really, yes. I mean, it was, of course.
Well, history remembers, well, the rockets, red glare,
absolutely,
the bombs, because that's what Star-Spangled Banner was written about.
To be fair, you know, they'd just seen Washington, their capital, burned.
Right.
Here was Baltimore about to suffer, perhaps, as many people in Baltimore suspected, the same fate. But they reversed it. They managed to hold on. Sam Smith organized the defense so brilliantly, the general in charge of the Baltimore militia and so on, and the George Armistead in the fort itself would put up a very, very defense. The British gave up.
Can we get the Star-Spangled Banner?
Francis Scott Key was watching it all. He saw it all happening, and he was so moved to see the Star-Spangled Banner that he wrote his poem the same morning.
Now, I love the story of the flag itself, which I didn't really know. The huge flag was put together by a woman whose picture is in your book.
Seamstress, Mary Pickersgill.
Mary Pickersgill, forgotten in American history. Right.
They put it all together, and it was 42 feet by 30 feet.
Nice.
It was a massive flag. Each stripe was 2 foot wide.
Finally, the War of 1812, at the end of it, the United States really acquired a level of confidence that it didn't have. And that carried forward into the next century, wouldn't you say?
No question. I think the War of 1812, which to Britain was just a tiresome sideshow, for America was very important. They did stand up very successfully, really, to be fair to them, to the huge British Empire, which Britain had 1,000 ships. The Americans had about 15. I mean, it was extraordinary. The only, I think, downside for the British, the disgraceful part of it, was the way they neglected. They intended to secure the rights of the Native Americans, the Indians, as they called them, in places like Ohio and Indiana, Michigan, and so on. But they failed. They just scrapped that intent when they came to the Treaty of Ghent. And the Brits said, oh, poor old Indians, they've been very nice to us, they've good allies, but we'll forget about them. And so that opened up that area to American settlement. That, I think, was a great British failure.
Peter Snow, thanks so much.
Thank you, John, very much.
Peter Snow is not responsible for the War of 1812, but he is the author of When Britain Burned Down the White House. And if you want to catch up on that conversation or listen back to any of our tiresome sideshows, check us out at thetakeaway.org. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. Thanks so much for listening. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
Support for The Takeaway comes from TiVo. No need to switch TV inputs, remotes, or interfaces to access cable TV and streaming from Netflix and Hulu Plus. Learn more at TiVo.com.
A lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.